This is our continuing coverage in the trial of Shanda Vander Ark, a twisted story of a mother who depraved her own child of food until the point of death, even employing her oldest son in this torturous charade. We now take you to the courtroom for our continuing coverage.
Why are we here? We're here, folks. We're here, folks. Because this case is not just terrible. It's weird. It's just strange. It goes into portions of our brains that we hope we don't have. And I say that because I'm a lawyer. I was paying attention to what Mr. Roberts says. One of the things he didn't talk about was what the statute says. And the judge read you this morning, so I'll read you again. The exact word of the statute for this type of crime is knowing and intentional. All the things that he says that my client did, she has to know and she has to intend for either one of these charges to be found guilty. And you know, and if you had a recorder and you could hear his old speech again, there's nothing about that. She knew, she intended. And you're going to be shown. Text messages. About a telephone book of text messages. And they're going to be read to you. Some of the juicier parts are going to be read to you. I ask you to pay close attention to those text messages. Because when you listen to those text messages and you're paying attention, and understand, these text messages were made and created at a time nobody knew there'd be anybody who'd ever read them. In other words, nobody's trying to fake what they're saying in here because they don't know anybody else is ever going to read them. So this is what they're thinking at the time. This is what's going in there. All the things that are going in there is raw and it's real and it's unedited. They go find those text messages. And what you're going to hear over and over again, over and over, as you listen to these messages, is my client, Shanda Vander Ark, and her oldest son, Paul Ferguson, had no idea that they were hurting this boy. If you listen to those messages, they don't have a clue. And it's two of them, it's not just the one, not her and just him. At one point, he sends her the picture. At another point, she asks him, is he okay? Do you think we should feed him? And each time, the other person deflects and they continue to go on. They don't figure out that they're hurting Tim until he's dead. That's the first time it occurs to them, hey, we got a problem here. And they get mad, and they panic, and they try to make up stories. She's going to testify. She's going to tell you what's going on. But as you listen to Paul's testimony, and as you listen to my client's testimony, neither one of them are aware of what's obvious to him and you and him and all the rest of us. We're all going to see it. How could you not see it? But listen to it. They don't. They see it. They don't see the suffering. They don't see this. They call what they're doing to him punishments, and they consider it in response to what he's doing. Over and over again. He's not going to win on this one. He's not going to get away with this. He's not going to do this. These are punishments that they feel are reasonable and are not hurting him. I have heard, and I expect Paul to take that stand and to tell you he wishes he could change everything now, and he wishes he could die for his brother now. But at the time he was doing these things, he didn't see a problem with it. In fact, Paul is the one, my client's the one. Paul wants to take it a step further. He wants to start getting physical with this boy. As my client who tells him you're not allowed to do that. These are appropriate punishments. There's no intention. There's no intention to hurt or kill or to abuse this young man. My client will take the stand. You'll find out she's a highly intelligent person. She went to law school. She passed the bar examination. She was in the process of trying to become licensed as this matter began. She graduated cum laude in her high school, college. I think law school is the second person on the list. She was clerking for judges. She was working and studying, and she was this close to achieving lifelong goals. Then she gets a call from her ex-husband. I'm putting Timothy out, the victim. You want him, or he's going to protective services. She takes him in. She takes him in. Send him to me. I don't want my son in the system. Send him to me. She brings him to her home. And then the wheels start to fall off in her life. Her husband gets seriously ill. She's now struggling with the expenses of the home and the three children and everything else that's going on. She's working. She's going to school. She's doing all these things. She's not sleeping. And something happens with her and Paul. They tend to see things that I can't, and I'm not a doctor. I don't have a doctor coming here to tell you about this stuff. All I have is Exhibit 1 or whatever it's going to be. That's going to tell you these people don't know they're hurting this kid. They love this child. They don't know. They don't see it. Whatever's going on between them, they don't see it until it's too late. And that's what happens. There is a terrible situation. Everything he said, you're going to hear, that's he didn't lie to you. But there's no intention to hurt this child. They love this child. There's no intention to abuse this child. They love this child. But they just don't see what's before their eyes and what you and I can see. They don't see it. And so they continue on a course which was not only destructive to him, but led to this hearing. They have no interest in doing this personally or in terms of their love to their child. This is something they don't know they're doing. They don't get it. And poor Tim ends up paying the ultimate price. But this isn't murder. This is not murder. This is something's wrong, but it's not murder. And we're going to ask you to find my client not guilty. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Johnson. If we have any phones on, I'd ask that there's
something buzzing over here. It's distracting.
Does somebody have a phone on or not now? Okay, I'd ask you either if they're buzzing and distracting, please shut it off. Certainly put it on vibrate, but if I haven't heard it, but if can somebody identify the source, let me know. So, and those in the gallery, I'd ask you please turn off your cell phones. Thank you. Mr. Roberts, you may call your first witness.
Thank you. Call Officer Stefanich.
Matter now pending. You swear or affirm the testimony you're about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God.
Yes.
All right, put your hand down and grab a seat. Please state your name for the record, spelling your first name and last name.
Officer Sean Stefanich. First name is S-H-A-W-N. Last name is S-T-E-F-A-N-I-C-H.
Thank you, Mr. Roberts. Thank you. Officer Stefanich, I want to direct your attention back to July 6th of 2022. Were you working in your capacity as an officer for the City of Norton Shores Police Department at that time, sir?
Yes, I was.
And approximately 6:30 that morning on July 6th, were you on duty?
Yes.
And were you dispatched to an address at 4788 Marshall in the City of Norton Shores, County of Muskegon, State of Michigan?
Yes.
And what was the nature of the dispatch to that address at that time?
It was assist to medical. We had a report of a 15-year-old that was not breathing, and I was dispatched there to help out.
And did you then go to that location?
Yes.
And were you in full uniform, such as you're dressed today?
Yes.
When you arrived, who was actually on the scene?
Both fire and ProMed were already on scene.
All right. I just need to stop you for just a second. Mr. Johnson and I discussed a matter this morning. There's media present And it's my understanding that there was a minor child that was present in the home. So you understand, for purposes of testimony today, we're just going to use that minor child's initial to describe his name. I'm not talking about Timothy Ferguson, talking about the minor child who goes by the initial G.
Okay.
You understand?
Yes.
Okay. So, I'm sorry, and I cut you off there. I apologize. I just wanted to make sure that we had that taken care of. I think you were describing who was in the home at the time that you arrived. So please continue.
When I arrived, fire personnel were already on scene, and the two paramedics were already there. I had been, originally when I was going to the call, I was going emergency, but I was notified by dispatch that Timothy had already been declared deceased, so I stopped doing emergency response and just drove there normally. So when I got there, ProMed was there, and they said he's already been declared deceased.
And did they direct you to where Timothy was located in that house?
Yes.
Okay. Can you describe the house? We're going to see some photographs in a little bit of the house, but can you describe the house just briefly for the jury, please?
It's pretty much a split-level house. What happens is there's a front door. You come in the front door, and then you have steps leading to the right, which go down to the basement, and then you have steps leading up, which go up into the front, the normal living area.
So it's a bi-level home?
Yes.
And where was Timothy located then when you arrived in the home?
He was in the basement, on the floor.
Were ProMed personnel still down in the basement around him?
Or? Yes, the one ProMed was, Nicholas Mock.
And at some point then, I ask it this way, what was the next thing you did in terms of establishing what had taken place after you observed Timothy?
I talked to the medical personnel, asked them what they did, what they saw, what had happened. And then I asked the mother what had happened prior to her calling 911.
And at that time, was the person you've identified as the mother, was she present at the scene?
Yes.
And would you recognize that person if you saw her again?
Yes.
Is she in the courtroom right now?
Yes.
Could you point her out for the record and identify what she's currently wearing?
She's wearing the dark blue blazer and ponytails sitting at the defense desk.
I'd ask the record reflect that the witnesses identified the defendant, Your Honor.
They will.
So you had a conversation with the defendant at that point in time, is that correct?
Yes.
Did you actually end up having two conversations with her?
Yeah, I had a couple conversations with her.
So initially, what was the purpose of your first conversation with Ms. Vandar?
Just to know what happened right there before 911 and kind of establish a timeline of what went up, happened.
Do you recall what she told you in terms of a timeline of what had taken place?
Yes.
What did she tell you?
She said at 5:30, she was woken up to Timothy falling out of bed. He sleeps in a bunk bed, the top shelf, or the top is the bed, and underneath is a desk.
And did you observe a bed in the basement area that matched that description?
Yes.
So she says at 5:30 he falls out of bed.
Correct.
And what does she indicate she does when he falls out of bed?
She checks on him, makes sure he's all right, helps him back up into bed, and then leaves him.
And this is about 5:30?
That's what she told me, 5:30.
And again, the time you were on scene was approximately what?
I got there at 6:48.
So this is about an hour and 15 minutes after she's describing Timothy falling out of bed and her putting him back into bed.
Yes.
Okay, and then what does she indicate took place?
She said about 6:30, she went back downstairs to check on Timothy and saw that he wasn't breathing.
And did she indicate that she attempted to call 911 at that point?
Yes.
Okay. And you would agree with me that the 911, your dispatch time was 6:37 that morning, is that correct?
That's the time in the report. Yeah, that's the time that they called 911, 6:37. Dispatch told me about the call at 6:38.
So within a minute or so of the 911 call, you're being dispatched as well?
Correct.
Is that standard operating procedure?
Yes.
So police, fire, and medical personnel are all dispatched?
Correct.
So 5:30, he falls out of bed. 6:30, she goes down to check on him again, and that's when 911 is called.
Yes.
Right. Now, when you observed Timothy, what observations did you make about him, about his physical person, obviously other than the fact that he was deceased?
He was very malnourished.
And when you say that, what can you describe what it is?
He was just skin and bone. He didn't have any muscles.
And at some point in time, we'll get into those photographs a little bit later and present those to the jury, but did you have an occasion to observe? Well, let me ask this first. How was Timothy dressed when you arrived on the scene?
He had an adult diaper on, and he had a sweatshirt on his torso.
And was he wearing any jeans?
I don't believe so. I think he was. I'm not positive, but I remember the adult diaper and then the sweatshirt because I had to lift the sweatshirt later.
Okay. And if he Well, let me just do this for just a moment. These are going to be later presented to the jury judge, but for purposes of refreshing your recollection, if you could just briefly take a look at what will ultimately be People's Exhibit 33. We're not going to show that on any of the TV monitors at that point. Do you recall that photograph?
Yes.
All right. And does that refresh your recollection in terms of how Timothy Ferguson was dressed at the time that you found him?
Yeah.
And how was he dressed?
He had jeans on. But as soon as he was declared dead, I pretty much put a sheet over him.
But that picture that you just looked at, that the jury will see a little bit later, that does appear to be the condition in which you observed Timothy Ferguson when you arrived on the scene.
Yes.
And during part of that process, did you lift up that sweatshirt and see both his back and front area?
Yes.
And that was documented in the photograph?
Yes.
So your initial contact with Ms. Van der Ark was establishing a timeline in terms of what had happened to Timothy, at least that morning. In your subsequent conversations with her, did you get a little bit more information about who was living in the home and what the living situation was?
Yes.
And again, ultimately, for purposes of maintaining some anonymity here, there was a younger child in the home as well, correct?
Correct.
And that younger child's initial begins with G, correct?
Yes.
And he was approximately how old, do you recall?
I think he was around 7. I don't know for sure.
Did you actually see him inside the home?
I saw him running around, but I never spoke to him and didn't really get all the concrete information about him.
But were you able to determine that that was actually a biological child of Ms. Van der Ark?
I believe so. That's what I was told.
And but you did observe that child running around the home, you said?
Yes.
Right? Did he appear to have any malnourishment issues or issues running around or moving?
No, he seemed normal.
And there was actually an older child in the home as well, is that correct?
Correct.
And that's Paul Ferguson.
Yes.
And did you actually observe him in the home as well?
Yes.
And did you observe anything in terms of his physical condition, in terms of concerns of malnourishment or inability to move, anything of that nature?
No.
And ultimately, did Ms. Van der Ark indicate to you that those were, including Timothy, those three boys that were in the home were her children?
Yes.
Did you establish approximately when Timothy had come to live with Ms. Van der Ark in Norton Shores?
Yes.
When did that take place?
She told me May of 2021. He had been living with the biological father in Oklahoma, and they're having problems with him or something to that effect, and so she took him in to her home there.
Did you ask her about why Timothy was wearing a diaper?
I did. Just said that he has accidents, so he's wearing a diaper.
Did you ask her about any medication that Timothy had been taking?
Yes, she said that he used to take medication for ADHD, but he stopped taking that because he started feeling better.
Now, Mr. Johnson's already alluded to it as an opening, but at some point did Ms. Van der Ark indicate to you that there had been another person that was living in the house earlier that year, in January of that year?
Yes, her husband.
Her husband?
Correct.
And what does she indicate happened with her husband that caused him to no longer be in the home?
He had a stroke, and because of the stroke, he couldn't climb stairs, so he could no longer live there, so he was staying with his parents.
So her husband had left the home sometime after the stroke happened in January. Was that your understanding?
That's what I was told.
And so that left her in the home with the three boys, Paul, Timothy, and G, right?
According to her, yes.
Did she indicate to you that there had been problems around that time with Timothy not eating?
Yes.
What did she indicate to you happened around the time of the stroke with Timothy not eating?
She said because of the stroke and some other family issues that Timothy had stopped eating for about 3 weeks.
And did she indicate to you that she got him to start eating again?
Yes. She said that she threatened to take him to the hospital, so he started eating again.
So this was taking place, she's indicating to you this was taking place around the time of the stroke happening in January, is that correct?
Correct.
And this was, at least what she was relaying to you, that this was Timothy's response to the stroke was to stop eating.
Yes.
And did she indicate there was another period of time where Timothy had stopped eating?
Yes.
What was that period of time?
She said in the last 2 weeks prior that he had stopped eating.
So
when this medical happened, he had for 2 weeks prior to that, he had stopped eating.
So you understood that to mean that she was saying the 2 weeks leading up to his death, Timothy had stopped eating?
Correct.
And did she indicate to you that she had got him to start eating again just prior to his death?
Yes.
What did she indicate had happened?
She told me that the night before she had given him 2 pieces of toast.
So after you speak to Ms. Van der Ark a few times there and have an observation of Paul, did you conduct an examination of the rest of that basement area of that home?
Yes.
And we've described it a little bit for the jury, but if you could describe a little bit more just the downstairs area, the layout of that downstairs area.
When you go into the basement, there's like a common area, and that's where the bed was for Timothy. They had made a bedroom into the common area. Right next to that common area is a small little closet, and then off of that room is two more bedrooms, a bathroom, and a utility room.
And was it related to you that the two bedrooms belonged to Paul and to the minor child, G?
Yes.
And you said there was a bathroom in the basement as well?
Yes.
And did you observe the bathroom?
Yes.
What happened when you walked into the bathroom?
When I walked into the bathroom, there was a video camera, a motion camera, that was sitting on the bathroom counter. And as soon as I walked in, it turned towards me. Made me think it's motion activated or he's sensitive.
And then did it track your motion then?
It followed me as I walked through the bathroom.
What did you observe about the bathroom itself?
Bathroom was very dirty. There was dirty adult diapers on the floor, and there was no shower curtain.
Did you observe anything on the counter of the bathroom that was unusual?
There was a bottle of hot sauce.
And if you recall, were there zip ties or any type of restraint in that located in that bathroom? If you recall.
I don't recall any of that.
As it relates to restraints, though, did you observe any other restraints in the basement area of that home?
Yes. There were leg shackles in the first common room where Timothy's bed was. There was a drawer. The desk area was really cluttered, and there was like a little stack of drawers, and it was open. And in the drawer was a set of leg shackles.
And what material were those leg shackles made of?
They were regular leg shackles. I checked with my cuff key, and my cuff key was used out. They were normal leg shackles.
These were metallic?
Like we would use, police would use.
And was there any padding on them, anything that would soften that leg shackle if that
No.
was placed on them individually?
No.
So you said, I think you said there at the end, the shackles that would be used, like the police would use or jail uses for
Yes.
prisoners?
Correct.
What other observations did you make about the basement area?
There's cameras everywhere. There was one camera that was facing Timothy's bed, so his bed would be here, and on the opposite wall there was a camera facing his bed. In the other room, G's room, there was a camera in his room that was facing the door, like it was trying to catch people coming going in. Then there was the camera in the bathroom, and then there was a fourth camera that was underneath Timothy's bed. When it happened, it appears that the camera was like placed down, so it was not recording anything, but it was still electrified and on.
But like the lens portion was facing down, is that
yeah.
what you mean? And that was under Timothy's bed?
Yes. It was laying on top of all the junk that was there.
But just put off to the side under the bed?
Yes.
Now, you talked about a closet area. Could you describe that in a little bit more detail for the jury?
The closet was right next to, was in between the stairs and Timothy's bedroom. There was a closet there. When we opened it, there really wasn't anything in there except for a tarp and a cardboard box, but there was a sensor that was attached to the wall. And what it is it's one of those sensors that people buy for alarms. So when you open up a door, it would give an audio alarm, but it's not connected to anything. And that was on the closet door and attached to the wall.
Now, based upon all your, well, let's talk about the upstairs area for a little bit. Could you describe that in some for some detail for the jury, the upstairs portion of the bylaw?
Upstairs, I really wasn't part of that too much, but there was a common area, kitchen, and then a bathroom and bedroom.
Did you make observations of the common area, the kitchen? Or?
Not really, okay. No, because I pretty much stayed in the basement. I was guarding the scene. I was securing the scene, make sure nobody went in and out of there.
And ultimately, was a search warrant obtained for that residence?
Yes.
And you were tasked with what at that point?
I helped search the basement.
Okay. And you kept the basement area secure from people coming and going?
Yes, made sure nobody came in or out.
All right. And was anything, did you observe while you were down there, anybody besides Timothy's body being removed, anything else being removed from the basement area?
No.
Nothing further,
thank you. All right, thank you, Mr. Roberts. Mr. Johnson.
Yes, sir.
Good morning, Officer Stefanich.
Good morning.
You were dispatched to my client's home, is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. And there, once you arrived, was my client still performing CPR on Timothy?
Not when I was there, no.
Okay, but you had been informed that she had been, in fact, attempting CPR on Timothy at some point, is that correct?
That's what the paramedics told me.
Right, so you arrive on the scene, you're talking to, I've got the video from your chest camera, you arrive at the scene, you're talking to a paramedic. And is that when they tell you what we found him? He's downstairs and she's doing the CPR and that sort of thing?
Yes.
Okay. And I also noticed from that chest cam, as you walk in, she's no longer in the basement. She's sitting on the front porch. Do you remember that?
No.
Okay.
I remember she was in the stair area. There's three sets of stairs. I know she was in the stair area somewhere.
Okay. Well, I'll ask my next question. I've got the video up and running so I can have you take a look at it if it's necessary. But let me ask this next question. It may not even be necessary. But I'm wondering what my client's demeanor was when you arrived and when you spoke to her, as you've testified, correct?
She appeared to be distraught.
Okay. Well, let's make sure. Distraught. What is distraught?
Distraught, emotional.
Okay.
I can't remember if she was crying, but, you know, she lost her son, so she was, displaying emotions of distress. And
okay. Would viewing the video allow you to remember whether or not she was crying?
Sure.
Okay. I don't even think you need the sound, but I have headphones in case you do. May I approach you on?
You may.
And this is, again, you have a chest video camera on your chest.
Okay.
You have cameras on your chest.
Yes.
Police issue. And it's running during the entire time you're in this room.
Yes.
Okay. May I approach? You said I could. So let's see if this works, officer. This is at 12:37, and I'm just going to run a few seconds so you can see.
Mr. Johnson, can you just aim a little more toward him? It's not an admitted exhibit yet, so okay. I just want to make sure the jury doesn't see it.
Is that enough for your refresh your recollection?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you, Your Honor. All right. Given that refresh recollection, can you remember if my client was crying or not when you saw her?
Yes, she was crying.
Okay. And you mentioned never mind. You did. You testified to that. You also mentioned finding leg shackles in the bed.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
All right. Now, as I recall watching the video and reading your report, you then checked the furniture for scratches.
Correct.
Why? Explain to the jury why you checked the furniture for scratches, please.
I checked to see if the child had been chained to a bed or something like that.
Okay. Yes, because if the child had been chained to a bed, you might expect to find, if it's a wooden furniture, scratches to where the chain rubbed against the wood. Is that what you're looking for?
That's correct. I'm looking to see if there's the handcuffs are pretty hard.
Okay.
And if they were chained to a bed, post or something like that, there should have been, you know, damage to that because of
metal handcuffs.
Correct.
Okay. Did you discover any scratches or any damage that reflected that possibility, or at least in your mind?
No.
I have no further questions.
Okay, redirect.
Just a couple of brief ones. Officer Stefanich, in terms of those handcuffs, you said Mr. Johnson asked you, and you said that you checked the furniture that you could see in terms of seeing if there were any scratch marks on that, and you didn't locate any. Is that correct?
Correct.
You recall what material Timothy's bed was actually made of, though?
It was metal.
You didn't observe any scratches on that, though, did you?
No.
That's all I
have. Recross, Mr. Johnson?
No, sir. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Officer Stefanich. You can stand down.
Thanks,
all right,
sir.
Thank you. May he be excused, Mr. Roberts? Or?
Yes.
All right. Mr. Johnson, may this witness be excused? Mr. Johnson?
Your Honor, I don't require Officer Stefanich to remain on the premises, but I'd like him to remain under subpoena in case we need to recall.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right, that's fine. So, Ms. Officer Stefanich, I'm assuming we didn't discuss it, I guess, in specific. The parties agreeing to a sequestration order of witnesses, I'm assuming, Mr. Roberts?
But for my investigating officers, I don't have anybody else here, Judge.
So all right.
It's effectively a sequestration order.
You don't want him to remain in the courtroom, though, correct?
That's correct, Your Honor.
All right, so Officer Stefanich, you're still under subpoena, so I do not want you to discuss your testimony with anyone else. Until released from the subpoena. Do you understand?
Yes, sir.
All right. You are excused.
Thank you.
All right. Mr. Roberts, who's your next witness?
My next witness is Officer Pieske.
Will that be a
half an hour, so if you want to take a break now.
Yeah, I think that's... I was going to take a break at 10:30, but this is one of those natural breaks. So at this time, ladies and gentlemen, we will take our morning break. Mr. Weaver will escort you back to the jury room. There's water back there. And we'll be back. Let's call it 10:30. Thank you. All right, maybe seated. Anything for the record before we recess, Mr. Roberts and Mr. Johnson?
Nothing, Your Honor.
All right, court's in recess.
Thank you.
There's more to come in the trial of Shanda Vander Ark. Here from True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers podcast. Stay with us.